Welcome, and thanks for listening to Intrinsic Investigations. My name is Mr. Olivo, and I created this podcast because I've been fortunate enough over the last decade to see unique and thought-provoking projects happen in my classroom, and we wanted a place to showcase them. The true heart of this podcast lies not in the content discovered, but in exploring the personal stories of these young researchers as they journey through uncharted and unfamiliar intellectual terrain. By sharing their stories, we hope to normalize the challenges and frustrations that come with independent research, and also share those moments where students transcend the normal grind of the school day to discover concepts that range from the global to deeply personal. We will begin with a brief introduction to the student of focus, why they picked their topic, and discuss their growth over the course of the last year. It should be mentioned that the opinions expressed in this podcast in no way reflect the opinions of our school district, Bergen County Technical Schools and Special Services, or our school itself, Bergen County Technical High School Teterboro, or the College Board. The work detailed in this podcast was most likely completed in AP Capstone, but this podcast is in no way affiliated with the College Board. In this final episode of Season 1, Jinu discusses political rhetoric and polarization on X. Today's episode is with a senior who, he's leaving the school in 14 days.
Yep.
He just attended the prom.
Mm-hmm.
The steak was mediocre.
For some. For me, it was a bit more brown.
Okay.
But yeah, for some, I heard it was pink, which, you know, is not ideal.
I guess it depends on the way you like your steak.
I do like a pink steak.
Okay.
You know, all like right. When it's all like brown all the way through, I don't know, then that's kind of too dry.
All right, we'll get into further steak conversations in a little bit, but why don't you introduce yourself and what your work was about this year.
Hi, everyone. My name is Junu Kim. I'm a senior in the Law and Justice major here at Bergen Tech, and my work was concerning the polarizing rhetoric in the X post, former tweets, but now known as X post since Elon Musk took over, of U.S. senators in the year 2023.
And like I said before, you've only got 14 days left here at Bergen Tech. Are you going into political science in college? That's a very political science research project.
Yep, I do think I am going to. I won't start at the College of Arts and Sciences at Boston University until my junior year, but at that point, I think I will be going into political science.
All right, great. Why did you pick this topic?
For me, it was about just over the years gaining more awareness about all of the polarization that's going on in this country as well as around the world. And just throughout my law experience and throughout the classes that I've taken, a lot of it was the public policy class I took last year, kind of opening my eyes to the things that are going on in the country around me and reading the news more. And through all of that, I just gained a deeper awareness of the very real problem of polarization in this country, where politicians as well as the general public are just becoming more extremist in their views between the right and the left. It's just becoming a lot more extreme, with people being far left or far right, and it is more pronounced in politicians. And this is making a lot of problems for everyone, because if they can't work together because they're too divided, then that's not good for Americans.
What did you find when doing your work? Is there evidence in that Twitter space or X space of polarization? And if so, what does it look like?
There is some, I did find evidence to some extent of polarization. It wasn't to a great extent. It wasn't to the extent that maybe I was expecting. It was a bit less. I did find that about 5% of the tweets that I coded were polarized. But what they looked like was, it was a lot of attacks on policy issues. So for example, criticizing House Republicans on taxing the rich. Or their tax policies about, you know, taxing everyday Americans instead of the rich from the Democrat side or from the Republicans. There was a lot of attacks on stuff like gun control, a lot of attacks on Democrats for different fiscal issues. So a lot of it was policy-based, and also a lot of it was attacking ideology as well. Republicans, for example, criticizing the Democrats for what is known as woke ideology, which is basically their term for liberal ideology. So there was both partisan relating to party and political party, and also ideological polarization relating to just your political ideology as well.
You mentioned your awareness of this issue and your growing awareness of it. Where would you say that awareness first began? Because I have a couple of follow-up questions after this based on what you just said. So where would you say your awareness of political polarization first came to be?
Mm-hmm. I think it was from just reading the news more, just like, you know, Google News app and whatnot, and also just from like reading through those, and I think especially during the Biden presidency, just a lot of the divisions that came up after Trump left office, you know, obviously the January 7th and or 6th insurrection, that for me, that helped highlight the political differences in this country, as well as stuff like the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020, or no, yes, 2020,
yeah,
May 2020.
Yeah.
I feel like those instances, they really opened my eyes to all of the divisions that exist in this country. Because, yeah, I think for me, it started in the pandemic, because prior to the pandemic, I wasn't really up to date on world events, on domestic issues either. But stuff like the Black Lives Matter protests, stuff like the like our geopolitical issues with China, for instance, just like all of the divisions that are going on in the world right now. So I think it was then, like early 2020, kind of just reading the news more as a result of these protests, and just like seeing how different politicians were responding to it.
Early 2020, that means this is COVID.
Right.
So at the time, how old were you?
I was 14. So I guess in just more of like maturing through your teenage years, you do kind of just understand the world more. So I think as I progressed through my teenage years, as you know, my mind matured, I guess so did to my understanding of the world.
And that's happening at the same time while there's a global pandemic. So there is a element, just speaking from personal experience, where I think we were all very tuned in to just what was happening in the
right.
world, because for most of us, we were at home
right.
and we were taking that information in from whatever sources we could gather at that point, which were mainly on the internet. It was, you know, in the wake of events. You have the pandemic, you have George Floyd, you have all these massive international and national events happening. So it's, unless you were really looking to avoid it, it was quite hard to avoid.
Right. Yeah. The pandemic really, it kind of made internet sources a new norm, more than it was previously even. Because that's how we were getting all of our information. And, you know, looking at COVID data and, you know, in the wake of George Floyd, that kind of stuff, I think really everyone, their eyes were more open to world events, I think.
Based on what you've seen, and I don't know how much you know about the disagreements politicians had prior to COVID, but based on what you saw in your data, you mentioned the polarization over things like gun rights, abortion, fiscal spending. These sound like things that American politicians have disagreed about over the last few decades quite routinely. What's new in how they're talking about it based on what you researched?
Mm-hmm. So what's new is Republicans criticizing President Biden specifically about his border policy. A lot of these ex posts weren't polarized because they're attacking Biden himself and not his party or his ideology. It was individualist attacks, which aren't really polarized because you're not really drawing a line there.
So more ad hominem attacks are not, those aren't.
Right, because you're not really drawing a line between groups, right? Because polarization
okay.
is between groups, an in-group and an out-group.
Gotcha.
But, you know, President Biden isn't really a group. So,
no.
So a lot of it was just attacking him on his border policy. And I think that's a more recent issue because under President Trump, I don't know if the immigration issue was definitely big. But now what we're seeing is Republicans really going after Biden himself about his issue, about this immigration issue, and that's more of a recent phenomenon, is this issue where you have the Southern Republican governors, like Governor Abbott of Texas, busing migrants all throughout the country and kind of bringing the issue to the northern cities, northern Democratic strongholds like New York City and Chicago. So I think one thing new that we're seeing is that it's not just the Southern Republicans that are now having to deal with immigration issues because of the busing. It's in New York City as well, and which is close to home since Bergen Tech is, what, no more than 10 miles from the city.
We could go right outside that door and see it quite clearly.
Yeah, look at the skyline. So I think, yeah, the immigration issue, it's really big this year. With all of this busing of migrants everywhere, it's becoming a large issue in more parts of the country than in previous years. So I do think that that's a new development.
Interesting. The other thing I would ask is, was there a frequent, of the things that came up as polarized speech, was there a particular topic like immigration that was the most frequently mentioned? Is that why you mentioned immigration? Was that the most frequently discussed topic in the tweets that you examined, or no?
It was one of the ones that was most, distinctive in the way that it was solely Republicans that were doing it, and a lot of it, the rhetoric was very similar between the different senators. I did notice that there no Republican tweet that I looked at or ex post that I looked at criticized the Democrats for their border policy. It was always President Biden for his border policy. And that's something that I found very interesting, was that a lot of their criticisms around the Democrats were more focused on Biden himself than the party. And I did not think that would be the case. But seeing that through the immigration ex post, I just thought was a very interesting trend.
So if I'm hearing you right, then no one actually says the Democrats' border policy. Let's rewind this a little bit. So 2017, Trump is the president. I know this is outside the scope of your work, but did you see anything that would indicate that Democrats on X, or that would have been Twitter at the time, on Twitter at the time would have been saying the Republican Party's stance on the border is wrong or just flawed, whatever, or were they using similar language and, according to your definition, not being polarized, but saying President Trump has failed at the border or something along those lines? I don't know if you saw anything like that.
I wasn't able to look at previous years, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, if they went after President Trump himself, just because Trump has become, was, and still is such a figurehead of the Republican Party. He is, I guess, he's their most prominent leader, or most prominent figure. He was their executive. And I just think he's a more easy target, because of his notoriety, because of, how many people know his name. So I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay. You mentioned before that your awareness really was highlighted at the time you were 14. You are now 18. This November will be the first time that you vote in a national election,
right,
or any election, right, for that matter. How do you feel this project and your knowledge of political science? You mentioned the law major helping you out in terms of public policy. I don't want to know who you're voting for, but how do you feel like your knowledge of these things is going to help you in the voting booth to make an informed decision? Mm-hmm. If you even decide to vote, again, that's your choice.
Right.
But what do you think on that?
I think the main thing I've learned through this is that rhetoric matters, and the ways that politicians are speaking matters. Because I saw some pretty damaging rhetoric, and to me, some people, dismiss rhetoric as just being, actions speak louder than words, so why care about their words? But to me, your rhetoric is what you put out to the world, and that's what you want your supporters to know. So your rhetoric is kind of a clue into who you are and what you represent. So to me, when I'm approaching this next election, I want to take a very close look at the rhetoric of whichever two political candidates do end up running for president, and just taking a close look at not just their rhetoric, but also their policies, because rhetoric often points to policies. A lot of the rhetoric that I saw in my studies were solely focused on the policies of these politicians. It wasn't like, and these weren't attacking other politicians. It was more just saying what they themselves were doing. So to me, that tells me that their rhetoric is a key to cluing into what they actually want to do with their time in office. So when I'm approaching this next election, I'm really going to, I plan to kind of really take a look at their rhetoric and then connect that to their actual tickets to see, okay, what are these people actually going to do with their time in office, or at least what are they promising to do, or what are they planning to do? Because to me, too many Americans vote for these politicians solely because they're Democrat or solely because they're Republican without taking a close enough look at their policies. Because at the end of the day, that's what really matters, is what they're actually going to do with their time in office, because that's what affects you. I mean, if someone's a Republican but they don't pass the kind of policies that you would agree with, what's the point of voting for them? Just because they are of your political party, that's not going to help you if they're not actually representing what you want done in government. So yeah, for me, it's really about just taking a really close look at their rhetoric, at their policies, and really just taking the nuance into account of not being able to, of having a legitimately good reason for voting for someone based on my agreements with their policies.
Let me give you a hypothetical here, and I just wonder what your take on this would be. Let's say I'm running for office, and the way that I vote is highly aligned to what you value as the voter. But my rhetoric is, well, what would you consider problematic rhetoric? I was about to give you an example of being hyper-aggressive, to the point of seeming uncompromising, making outlandish claims at points, but doing it in a way where I get my point across and ultimately I pass bills that you may support. Is that what you would think as problematic rhetoric, or how do you define that?
I would define problematic rhetoric as rhetoric that explicitly encourages violence against other individuals.
Okay.
Because I think that, I mean, extremist rhetoric, that's more tricky to define.
Right.
I think it's easier to spot rhetoric that is actively calling for violence. And I think that's problematic because that has real-world consequences where people could actually get hurt outside of just the internet space. So if that's the method that they use to get the policies that I want passed, I would ask, is it worth the cost then? Do the ends justify the means? And to me, I don't think so. I think that there needs to be some way of passing these policies without having to resort to such rhetoric. Because if you do have to resort to such rhetoric, then maybe you need to take a look at your own base or your own ways of gaining support to kind of see, was the support even there if you have to resort to such extremist means to drum it up?
Well stated. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I know that was getting intense politically, but we only have a little bit of time left. And I want to ask you a question because you're the only person this season of this podcast who's actually in the scenario I'm about to describe. You took AP seminar the first part of this course your sophomore year. You did not take AP research your junior year. You waited a year. Well, for lack of a better term, we'll say took a gap year. Do you think that that ultimately helped your performance by the time you got to this research phase? Do you think that that year in the middle allowed for some maturity on your part, or allowed just a little more breathing room your junior year that ultimately paid off your senior year, even though I've heard there's this infection known as senioritis that gets passed around at a certain point, usually around January.
Right.
And it's very hard for them to shake off. The inoculations are not effective.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like that year off impacted your performance, either positively or negatively?
I think it helped a lot, actually, because at the end of sophomore year, as I was thinking about what I wanted to do for AP research, I really wasn't sure at all. The end of the year project for AP seminar, which was like kind of an intro to what you might do in AP research, for that I looked at, I think it was ecological language in Frank Herbert's Dune. But as I was doing that, it was more, to be honest, something that I just did for the assignment as opposed to something that I actually planned on doing in AP research. I wasn't sure if I was going to do that. And really, one of the main reasons that I did not take AP research in junior year was because I wasn't sure what I was going to do for it. But by the start of senior year, I knew what I wanted to do with it. for it, and I knew from the very start. And my initial pitch in September, it's been the same since now. I have not changed from that because I did know that that was something that I was very interested in. And I think that gap year really helped me to narrow my focus and to discover that, yes, I am genuinely interested in political science and in political rhetoric, because in junior year, I started to see more how that affected me personally. Kind of more increased awareness of these issues did start around, like, you know, freshman year. It really started to take off, really, more in junior year. So throughout junior year, I was, just learning more about this issue. And by the end of it, I was sure that this is what I wanted to do for AP Research. So I think it did help. And I think just like going back into the capstone flow of things, I think, was slightly more difficult coming off of not having done that for a year. But I do think that junior year, it helped me kind of refocus my interests, and it also helped me to just have more experience with writing papers. There are negatives and there are positives, but I do think that it helped me a lot.
Everything in the research process is a trade-off, and I think that it's great to hear your perspective on that. To summarize, if a student, according to Jinu, if a student was on the fence or didn't really know what they wanted to do their junior year, rather than trying to force something when September rolled around, consider taking that year off. You're always learning. Human beings are always learning. So the idea that if you don't take AP Research your junior year, it's never going to happen. It's like something might click, even as I've heard from multiple interviews this season, just things in your world that just come across you every day. It's like, that could trigger an idea that then spirals into something that's worth researching, in your opinion. So according to you, there's no shame, and I would reemphasize this, there's no shame in using that year off to kind of catch your breath, because SEM is a challenge, and then seeing if some connection is made for something that you really want to explore in research, rather than forcing it your junior year.
Right, because this class is really driven by your own passion for what you're doing. And if you haven't found something by the beginning of that year that you would gladly do for an entire year, that's not going to help you. And I think it's more useful to you to get more out of the class if you know what you're doing from the start. Because obviously it is possible to not know what you're doing at the start and then figure it out later in the year and make a switch. I know that has happened successfully before. But if that's not really what you wanted to do with your year, and I knew that wasn't really what I wanted to do with the year, it really does depend on what you want to do. You know, if you think that you could go into the year not knowing what to do and then come out the other side knowing what to do, that's how you work, and then that's what you should do. You should, if you feel that you could succeed that way, then do that. But for me, I knew that I kind of needed to just step back a little bit and really figure out what I did want to do, kind of learn more about the world, because I knew that it would be difficult for me to make a switch to something that I really was passionate in midway through. So, yeah, I would say it is like a personal decision.
Thank you for being courageous enough to take a step back. I think right now, just as a teacher, I see a lot of students who almost refuse to take a step back, and then they spread themselves too thin, and then they get frustrated with the fact that they're not performing at a high level in everything. And we're human beings. We're limited. We can't do that. So to understand your limitations is highly important in order to push yourself. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you could just get stuck in trying to do everything at a somewhat low level.
Right.
Or at a level where you're operating, but it's just very stressful and just not sustainable.
Like, to me, it's better to wait until you can achieve excellence than to just settle for mediocrity in the moment.
That's patience right there. And on that, I feel like we should just end it. All right,
Sounds
Jinu.
Good.
Yeah, Jinu, thank you so much for your time. Good luck next year at Boston University.
Yep.
They're lucky to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.